Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
There's a perception going into your fourth year that perhaps you're on the hot seat going into this year. Do you feel that? Do you sense that? Do you care about that? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, you know, when you take this position, one of 32 positions in the NFL like I did, it's never all peaches and cream and rosy. There's always going to be times where you hit some adversity and you get challenged, and people, that not everybody's going to like you, and people are going to disagree with things that you do and things that you say. But I go back to the core of who I am and the people that have surrounded me and supported me from day one, and just kind of like you and I were just talking about. And I rely on that. And I completely understand that in this business, there's a lot of people that have been in my situation, but now it's all about, how do you handle it? You know, do you start placing blame? Do you start looking for different reasons as to why you're in this position? Or you just, you know, knuckle up and say, let's go, man. Let's stay positive. Let's stay together. Let's fight through this thing together, meaning our city, our fans, our organization, our players, coaches, and that's what we're going to do. And so now here we are with a great opportunity in front of us to do this thing together. And in the end, who knows which way it's going to go, but I know this, we're going to have fun doing it, and we're going to do everything we can to get this thing back on track and continue to win and get this organization to the top.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is the voice of Matt Nagy. He was on the Ross Tucker podcast, and we'll get to that. We have to talk about what he said there. But Tom, there is some really sad, horrible news connected to the Bears this morning. The twin brother of running back Tariq Cohen was found dead at a North Carolina electrical substation. This was yesterday. Police said that a Duke Energy employee found Tyrell Antar Cohen's body at a substation near Raleigh early Sunday morning. He was 25 years old, obviously, as is Tariq Cohen. And according to the story, he fled the scene of a car accident, the brother, in Raleigh around 2 a.m. on Saturday, and authorities called off their search. They couldn't find him, and then the family filed a missing person report because he never came home, and they resumed the search, and then they found that he had apparently entered this substation while he was leaving the scene of whatever the accident was, and unfortunately electrocuted himself, and no foul play. It was just apparently a horrible accident. And you know, Tariq Cohen's been through a lot. I mean, not only missing a year with injury, he had a younger brother who I believe was shot and is in bad, you know, has some injuries as a result of that. And now he loses his twin brother. May God rest his soul and bring some relief to the family. That's all you can wish for. The Bears sent out statement saying, "We are heartbroken to learn of the death of Tariq Cohen's twin brother, Tyrell. Our immediate thoughts and prayers go out to Tariq, his mother, Tywanda, and the rest of the family and loved ones. On behalf of the entire Bears family, we extend our most heartfelt sympathies to all who mourn his loss."
Yeah, I mean, I feel so awful for Tariq, because he is such a a life, a vibrant personality. He's excited. He's a smiling guy. He's very engaging. From the first interview that Jeff and I did with him, his rookie year, to where he's grown to since then, he's a completely different person. And I couldn't really think about anything that could be more awful than losing a twin brother.
Oh.
But he's talked about his relationship with his other brother that suffered the injury and how he talks to him every day. And tries to be a positive influence in his life, just like I'm sure he is in everybody else in his family. But when you don't have that everyday influence on your family members and you're not making eye contact with them every day, then, you know, they go out and do the different things they do. However, for Tariq, I am so sad for him. And when you hear about something like that, and I know the influence that he's been on his teammates, he's been in the organization, you know, prayers go out to him and his family. And, you know, it's just a sad events that took place.
You feel awful for him, and you know, again, you know, just it's hard enough to suffer an injury. He had an ACL injury, missed last season, and then, you know, obviously coming back this year, and now this tragedy in his personal life. I can't imagine what he's going through. I did not know that he had a twin brother. Did you know he was
a
twin?
Yeah,
I did not know that, and I know. Like, for instance, Dylan Cease is a twin and Nick Madrigal is a twin. Like, you kind of I think it's incredibly cool to have a twin brother. But, it's also just I can't imagine how close the two brothers are and all of that, you know, to lose someone at the age of 25. I mean, that's just a difficult thing for him. So,
well, you
God
know,
love him.
Tariq, I hope he can. I'm not asking him to turn it into a positive, but he's got to be an influence on his family, and he's got to be the person that we've grown to know him to be. And they're never going to forget about anything that's taken place. But Tariq, you know, the recovery from the injury and getting back on the football field and giving his family and his support system something to look forward to. You know, like I said, man, prayers go out to Tariq and the support of his family.
Yeah, it's awful. It's just an awful story. Getting back to the Bears, and again, you know, it's a very difficult transition to make, but we played Matt Nagy talking about his job security on the way in, and it wasn't, you know, he didn't really get into it. Oh, it's a good question, but his answer wasn't very specific about it. And, I got to tell you, Tom, I don't think these guys have much to fear. I think that if you look at the way they drafted this year, it was done with an eye toward the future. I'm not just, you know, obviously they give up first and fifth round picks to move up, but also first and fourth round picks next year. That's a lot of draft capital that you're using to move up in a draft. Then you come down and you give up the rest of your third round pick. They're already obviously without the fourth. And then that they lose the other fifth and they got one back. But when you think about it and you look at where they're at, that's not a draft that was done by a team in this win or else type of mode. That was done with an eye toward the future as much as anything else. Getting a guy that you think can play left tackle in the second round, moving up to do so, moving up in the first round and tapping into next year's draft. I don't know that Ryan Pace or Matt Nagy feel like they have to win this year to keep their job. It seems like just based on, you know, even the fifth round pick is another offensive tackle. It's almost like you're stockpiling a position instead of trying to get the cornerback you think they need. And I'm not complaining about their draft. I thought they had a good draft. But I think that when you start talking about sixth round picks and et cetera, that's a roll of the dice on whether guys make teams. I mean, they make it maybe based on the fact that they were drafted, not necessarily because they're ready to help immediately.
Well, this is going to be about the first two picks in the draft.
Yeah.
And the first pick in the draft is going to be determined by how successful Matt Nagy can transition Justin Fields from the college game to the pro game, take advantage of all of his traits that they've identified as having a you know, a decade type of talent and influence on your football team. And you're going to see direct evidence of Justin Fields' development throughout the course of the early portion of the season through training camp and into the season. And that will be a reflection on Matt. And then you look at the reflection of Ryan and Tevin. Can Tevin play? Obviously he's, you know, been judged. Can he play left tackle? That's going to be the determining factor of the success of the pick of Tevin Jenkins. And so each of these guys are going to have their hand on each of these players. Ryan's not going to have a lot to do with the development of Justin Fields, and Juan Castillo is going to have a lot to do with the development of Tevin Jenkins, because that he was identified by Ryan and his scouting staff that this guy is the most ready to come in and play, because they got rid of the guy who was playing. So I think there's, you know, we're talking about two different storylines here between two different people on the staff of the Bears, one being Matt and one being Ryan. And you're going to be able to judge the evidence of the development of Justin, because the quarterback development is so obvious. If the passes are, you know, off target, or you're making mistakes and, you know, what you said in the huddle and the way you run the play on the field. So it's going to be different pressures on both of these guys for each of these players to succeed.
You know, I think it's fascinating, the idea that, you know, obviously you need those players to succeed. But the Bears have a pretty good defense. They got a pretty good defensive front. And hopefully we see more out of Robert Quinn, or see something, I should say, out of Robert Quinn. I don't know if you look at that defense and you see them taking a step back. The cornerback position is up for grabs. I mean, you know, you signed a guy in Trufant, who is on a 1-year deal for like $1 million, just over $1 million. And then you got Artie Burns back again. He was out with a knee last year for just under $1 million. These are 1-year deals. So you don't look at that defense and say that it has the same teeth that it may have previously had. Now you got your safeties back. You know, Jalen Johnson hopefully takes another step forward, but he was injured at the end of the year. You just worry about the health of the secondary, and specifically the cornerback, because you lost two of them. Don't forget that Buster Skrine was let go for cap purposes before Kyle Fuller was let go for cap purposes. So you're not as good at that position, but you still have a lot and a lot of investment in that group. Hopefully you're getting better on offense, and this draft was very offensive oriented, especially, you know, with a couple of with a kick returner type guys that could help you immediately out of the backfield or in the slot or wherever you want to play both of them. But the fact is that you're kind of getting little weapons and little trinkets for your offense, and you're leaving that defense to itself. Do we think the Bears at 8-8 the last couple of years are ready to have a winning season? And if they don't, do you measure the GM and the coach upon that?
You know, the determining factor of the success of the defense is going to be career years out of Robert Quinn, Eddie Goldman, and Akeem Hicks. The other pieces that you can put in place, if they don't have a quarterback that's, you know, in, you know, that's getting nervous because he's getting pressured so much by the guys up front, it doesn't matter who you have in the defensive backfield, because they'll take advantage of experience or youth back there. So because of the pandemic, we have no idea how to determine what Eddie Goldman's going to be capable of upon his return. We know what Akeem Hicks can do, but we need to do it more with more frequency. And that way he's going to be able to help Khalil Mack be more of what they brought Khalil Mack on board to be. If you look at the other side, Robert Quinn sat out all of training camp last year. Right. He had some type of leg issue. He's got to be 100% healed from that. And he's got to be able to play more snaps and get more pressure on the quarterback with greater frequency. I'm really encouraged by the continuous development of Bilal Nichols, because he's a guy that's helped up front, and Roquan Smith has to stay healthy for 17 games and be the all pro that he can. I don't care about Pro Bowls. That means nothing to me anymore. He's got to be all pro.
Right.
And that's where that those are going to be the determining factors of the success for Sean Desai, the new defensive coordinator. With limited experience he has at calling defenses, I'm going to be interested to see where he sits on the field or in the booth to make those calls. But you're going to have to go out there and you're going to be able to have – you're going to need to have a challenge to these veterans on the team to provide what they were brought here to provide to help fill – allow these young guys to develop. Whether it's Artie Burns or Trey Roberson or Trufant or whoever's going to play that corner. And then you talk about the nickel position, whether it's the kid they drafted this year, is it Graham?
Graham and Vildor, isn't he kind of the
– Yeah, Vil, you know, they got Vildor, they got Duke Shelley,
right,
and they got the
right
kid they drafted this year. One of those guys got to come up and provide what Buster Skrine has the last couple years. And I like Buster. Unfortunately, he had the concussion issues that they probably had to move on for. And then you got to hope that Jalen Johnson comes back to form.
Right.
What he did last year, you know, there was a little bit of uncertainty when they were – the opponents were evaluating him, even though he was a rookie. Now they have a little bit more evidence of his pros and cons. But again, Akeem, Eddie Goldman, Robert Quinn, it's going to be up to you guys in order to make this defense become what they expect it to be.
And you know, they let Akeem look for a trade, right? They allowed him to go out. There was talk about him being in trouble with the cap. You know, Robert Quinn, you couldn't cut him if you wanted to, but you could cut him after this year. It's just you have to be aware of the salary cap implications with a lot of these guys. There are players that really need to have a big year to preserve their career with the Chicago Bears. And, you know, I hope that we are looking at a bunch of guys, as you kind of said, they need big years. I hope we're looking at guys that had injuries and had other factors that will help them be better, and that the defense will still be good enough to help this team win. My worry is, as you are building up your offense, your defense is aging, and you're going to have to start a rebuild on that side of the ball moving forward. And now, obviously, you don't have first and fourth round picks.
Right. You know, the thing about it is there's going to be evidence in the eye test with a lot of these guys. You know, when you look at Robert Quinn, does he have that explosiveness off the edge and what you brought him here for to take advantage of inexperienced left-hand sides of the line of scrimmage? When you look at Akeem Hicks, is he in better shape? Is he more physically conditioned where he can give you, you know, 40 snaps of just, you know, killer type of aggressive domination on the offensive line. So those are the types of things that you're going to be able to evaluate quickly, just like what type of shape does Eddie Goldman come back in. Here's a guy that's sat out all last season, and when you sat out, it doesn't mean that you couldn't condition yourself. You better have been having some type of activity inside of a weight room and on a field that you are on your feet, you're moving. Because if you come back and you're 360 pounds,
right
there, I know what you've been doing last year, and I know they went and signed Mario Edwards Jr., and I like the snaps that he was able to give them, the versatility on the defensive line with the rotation they're going to use. But, you know, they need a couple of other guys to come in and fill the void of some of the players they lost within the last year.
All right, we're going to get to John Heyman. Our baseball expert joins us next. Mully and Haw with the great Tom Thayer on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. John Heyman.
Feels like an Arby's night.
MLB Network Insider, WFAN New York. Larry David Enthusiast, at John Heyman on Twitter.
Pretty good.
John Heyman.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. The great Tom Thayer sitting in for David this morning, and we are delighted to welcome in our friend John Heyman. What a great man to talk to, and he joins us on the hotline, the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or APNissan.com. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Mully, you seem like you're in even better spirits than usual. I wonder why.
Well, I got to tell you, it's extraordinary to me One of the things I was hoping for over the weekend, and I said this on Friday, is just not having the manager involved, not having any kind of concern about Tony La Russa and does he know the rules or what's going on. And the White Sox pitching has erased all problems. They have been on such a roll, John. It's extraordinary to watch. And you know, Carlos Rodon, he's got to be comeback player of the year. I don't know. The guy was like, he was going to be out on the street. He could have gone anywhere. He comes back, and look what he's doing. It's extraordinary to me.
Yeah, Rodon, to me, he's the signing of the winter at $3 million. Fantastic. Wow. They knew him. They knew the potential. He's the best number five pitcher in baseball. he is that. You know what? Cease is a pretty good number four pitcher as well. I think they're overall staff, in my mind, right now, on paper, going forward, is probably the best in the American League. So they should win that division. I don't know if it'll be going away. Obviously, Minnesota's off to a terrible start. Kansas City, as we talked about last week, is a mirage. They have played no winning teams other than the White Sox and have not done well against the White Sox. So I know the lead is slim right now, but things are looking good on the South side.
Hey, John, when they show the stats of pitchers like Lynn and Rodon and they show the amount of pitches that they've thrown this season, why is the curveball thrown with such infrequency?
I'm not sure. I mean, Rodon has great stuff. Whatever he throws, it's working. You know, he's always had that great breaking pitch. You know, I'm not there in the meetings, but I think Rondon is a good handler of pitchers. He's probably not the best receiver, but he's a great handler of pitchers, so I trust him, and I trust them. You know, I feel like their staff is really, really fantastic. I mean, Giolito's the ace, and he's probably at this point in the least of their five pitchers to this point.
John, you know, we thought the Dodgers were going to be the best team in baseball, and they've struggled. I don't know that we thought that San Francisco was going to be the team we were talking about out of that division. But the Giants have been shockingly good over the start of the season. Did you see it coming? Is it just a question of playing young guys? What's going on there?
No, I did not. I mean, I thought that their offense was underrated last year. They had a lot of guys with an OPS plus of 120. Obviously, Yastrzemski lived up to his name, shall we say, and became a star last year. But I didn't see this pitching staff doing this. I'll give Farhan Zaidi, who runs that operation, a lot of credit. He found undervalued players for the Dodgers, Muncy, Taylor, and he's done it again. Aaron Sanchez with Toronto had some injury history, had a great workout, and they got him in a bargain. DeSclafani looks like a bargain. Alex Wood, who we knew from the Dodgers, looks like a bargain. Gausman, who they gave that one-year qualifying offer, looks like a good deal. To me, I thought that was a lot of money, $19 million for what I didn't believe was a star. You know, they have good evaluations. I'm shocked, and I'm even more shocked about the Dodgers right now.
John, I was looking at a stat, and it said the Cubs have had the best offense since April 17th. Is this a sustainable, or is there any specific attachable reasons why?
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. It was about the worst up until mid-April, and it's been the best since. So overall, it's been a little bit above average, probably. I think they're a solid team, and that plus the fact that they're in that division are probably the best things they have going for them. They got some smart pitchers, not overwhelming, a lot of soft throwers. It's an unusual rotation at this point because everybody throws 95 except for their pitchers, it seems. But, I think that they're a solid team and they'll be hanging in that division till the end. I liked Milwaukee to begin with. I think they win a lot of close games with their bullpen. Right now, St. Louis looks like the best team. Milwaukee's been hampered by injuries, even though they've been good against the Cubs. I just think that division is going to be tight all the way to the end.
I like my Sox on the South side. I don't like them in Boston. But the Boston Red Sox are unbelievable. What gives with them, and can they sustain it?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, they may get Sale back at some point, which would be shot in the arm, no pun intended. You know, it's their stars that have come through, Bogaerts, Devers, and J.D. Martinez. They had some low-cost pickups, and, you know, they've been fine. But basically, it's Bogaerts, I think, might be the most underrated star in baseball. J.D. Martinez, obviously a great hitter. Devers, one of the best young hitters in the game. And right now, their offense is the only one that's really normalized, you know, with a batting average over 250. Everybody else seems to be hitting 220, 230. It's been one of those years. We've got the four, is it four no-hitters now? I can't even keep track.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Four no-hitters, but they're the one team that's really hitting. I still think the Yankees are better. You know, I think they're good enough to contend. Eventually, I'm not sure they're better than the Rays or the Jays. So I'm not a believer, not yet anyway.
Hey, John, so being a fan of baseball but really not knowing the rules and all the ins and outs, but every game you hear or you listen to, they talk about launch angle and exit velocity. For novice people like myself, is there any reason to pay attention? Do you pay attention to it, or is it just a new stat that's aboard that everybody wants to use?
I mean, exit velocity, it's interesting, especially if it's Giancarlo Stanton, who seems to have three-quarters of the hits that are above 112 miles per hour or something like that. I don't know the exact stat, but as an average, it probably gives you some idea what's going on. I don't love launch angle. I mean, some of those teams that are into launch angle are hitting worse than the others. So, you know, I mean, people love, you know, the new stat people love the home runs and the walks. And, you know, that's good if you have those kind of hitters. If you don't, I'm not so sure. I mean, look at the Seattle Mariners. They're all into launch angle. They're near the bottom in every offensive category overall. I'm worried that they're messing up some of their young guys. Evan White, who they signed to a long deal before he even played a game in the majors, he's batting about 140. And basically, almost everybody on that team is struggling except for Kyle Seager, who's doing is a veteran and doing his own thing. And, you know, they have a big star in the minors, Kelenic from Wisconsin there. And I hear he's told them to forget about it. I'm not doing that anyway. And he's going to do his own thing. But the other guys, I think they're messing some of them up. So I don't love the launch angle. I certainly don't love the overemphasis on it. I mean, hard hit rate, I look at it. I think it's interesting.
It's fascinating because Kyle Hendricks struggled again yesterday, and he gave up, whatever, four runs or something in the first inning. I forget, and I watched it. But, he's been struggling, and they get these kind of seeing eye hits yesterday, and apparently four of the singles he gave up were under 75 miles per hour exit velocity. I mean, these are just dinks and dunks type thing. But isn't that the danger when you're talking about a contact pitcher, that people make contact, and you gotta have the luck of the ball going at people when the ball's in play?
Yeah, I mean, certainly making contact, I think, is still very important. I mean, I know all this launch angle, hard hit rate, people don't worry about strikeouts anymore, but teams that avoid the strikeout, make contact, and also had that power were the ones that really did well in the recent years. The Dodgers, not a big strikeout team. I know the Astros, we all know they cheated, but, you know, they did make contact and maybe had a little help, but they made contact along with the home runs. Making contact, I think, is still key. I saw the Mets won a game the other day with about a 40-foot dribbler with the bases loaded. And, you know, if you make contact, something good can happen. You never know when the defense is going to make a mistake or you're going to get lucky. So certainly Hendricks is not going to strike out a ton of guys. So that's one of the dangers of being a soft thrower. But obviously he's had terrific success in his career, so I'm not going to question it. And he obviously doesn't have the ability to throw 95, so wouldn't worry about it. I think he's going to be fine. You know, they have a nice, solid staff of soft throwers. We'll see if they make the playoffs. I mean, historically, you'd rather have the hard throwers in the playoffs. It'd probably be tough for them in that situation.
John, when you look at Rodon and you look at Mercedes, which one, with the injuries with the Sox, which one of the two has to be sustainable throughout the season? Because yesterday, Mercedes got a triple yesterday.
A triple.
And I never, watch him run, I didn't know if that was going to happen. But if you're looking at a pitching staff or the injuries the Sox have had and you need a big bat, to you, what which one of the two needs to be sustainable?
You know, I always favor the pitching, so I guess Rodon. I mean, Mercedes, it's an amazing story. I believe in him. I think he's going to do it. They believe in him now. I mean, it's one of the reasons, probably not the only reason, that going for Pujols. Certainly need that bat, though, with him, without Jimenez and without Robert and for months, for at least 3-4 months. He's vital as well. But to me, you got Rodon going and you get Lynn going eventually, and you've got five really good starters, and there just aren't teams in the American League that have those kind of five starters. And that's, to me, that's the way they're going to win. I think their offense is going to be okay. Grandal's going to hit more. Abreu's going to hit more than he has. And I think the offense will be good enough no matter what. But I am a believer in Mercedes, by the way. But I don't know that he's more necessary than a starting pitcher. To me, pitching is how you win.
I got to tell you, John, the White Sox on Saturday had an outfield that consisted of the designated hitter Andrew Vaughn in left field, utility man Leury Garcia in center, and second baseman Danny Mendick in right field. If someone had told me that was going to be the starting lineup in May, I would have like collapsed and thought that the season was over. I would never imagine they'd be in first place in the division by a game. It's just extraordinary the losses they've suffered and the way they've managed to overcome it. And you're right, it's all starting pitching, right?
Yeah, their pitching's fantastic. I think eventually their bullpen is going to be fantastic too. Hendricks been the best closer in the game the previous 2 years. Yeah. Once he gets going, I mean, Crochet, obviously Kopech's been fantastic.
Aaron Bummer of late has been really good.
Really good. I mean, their pitching is great overall. I do think they are brainstorming to try to figure out what outfielders they can get. There's no market at this point. Obviously, they signed Goodwin. Hopefully, he gets going and shows them something and can come up there and do something. But you know, at this point, you know, there's basically two or three teams that know they're going to be sellers, and those are not really good teams with outfielders to sell, we don't think. So, you know, it's unfortunate the injuries occurred now, probably at least a month or a month and a half before the trade market gets going. I mean, you know, they're just going to have to make do with what they have for the most part, I think. With all the injuries around baseball, with the fact that almost every team, with the exception of really two or three, Detroit, Colorado, you know, Pittsburgh, I'm sure will be down there, maybe Baltimore. So three or four teams are, you know, not going to be in it. The other 26 teams all think that they're in it. So, you know, it's early May. They're going to have to figure it out and make do for now. I think they're trying. They're out there hustling, trying to come up with an outfielder, but I'm sure that the asking prices are enormous considering the situation the White Sox are in. Teams trying to take advantage of it.
John, you're the best. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Great talking to you guys as always. Have a good day.
Thanks,
John. That is John Heyman. What a wonderful fella. And we're going to bring in Lamon Pope next. It's Mully and Haw. He is the great Tom Thayer on Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Hey, Tony, just what did you see out of Lucas Giolito today?
You know, just the heart of a champion of a Lion. You know, that first inning could have gotten away, and he responded by limiting it to one run. And then, you know, he was working the whole day, and it was not an easy game for him. And he gets through five, and made a lot of pitches that he had to make at the right time, so I mean, that was a competitor in him that, you know, to go five innings when, you know, he probably wasn't as fine-tuned as he usually is. But we were all really impressed with the way he competed.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. The great Tom Thayer sitting in for David this morning. And we are delighted to welcome in the man you just heard, not Tony La Russa, but Lamont Pope with the question. And he joins us on the Al Pamani Nissan Hotline, Al Pamani Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. And Lamont, of course, covering the White Sox for the Chicago Tribune. Lamont, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. I'm doing well. How are you?
You know, enjoying watching the White Sox. Enjoying when we don't have to talk to the manager about a crazy decision. And instead, we can ask him, hey, how good is this pitching staff? Which is pretty extraordinary. And you know what's interesting is Giolito was the guy that wasn't holding up the end of the bargain, right? He was the guy that was struggling a little bit while this rotation was just kind of going from strength to strength. And there he is, a big part of it as well. So it's almost a relief when Lucas pitches like he did.
Yeah, and like Tony said, that first inning was crucial. The first two guys get on, and then you get the double play there. That was the key to, you know, you get the one run, but that was the key. He was able to set on down after that. You know, that inning could have gone the other way, you know, and the way that Lucas, obviously, the outing that he had there in Boston,
right,
where it did go and blow on up in the first inning there. You know, he was able to get on out of that with only the one run and then settle on in. Lucas said after the game that he sort of navigated through the outing, and you kind of see that that was the case. You know, the two hits in the first and only two for the rest of his outing.
Hey, Lamont, do they have a plan in place for Kopech? I mean, do they have a design how many pitches they want to offer him each outing, and maybe his role will change in late September and October? Or is, because they don't know a lot about him, is it still just kind of a wait-and-see scenario, and we'll feed him the more that we can offer him as the season goes on?
Yeah, I think it's a little more of that wait and see. I mean, it's a situation where they know that the value that he provides out of the bullpen right now for them, but they're also, if there's an opportunity to have a spot start, he's going to get it. The next spot start is probably going to be Friday. They have a doubleheader against the Royals. And so if they see an opportunity to get him one of those chances to get back in the rotation, I mean, Michael loves starting. He knows that, you know, that's obviously going to be the long-term plan for him, and he gets jacked on up every single time he has the opportunity to start. So he would prefer to, if that opportunity came about to work his way on into the rotation, you know, he'd be all for it. But the Sox know that, you know, he's been such a valuable piece for them out of the bullpen, you know, being able to go two or three innings, that, you know, it's sort of like that wait and see, and just sort of, you know, the big thing for them is to try to get him to September and to October where he can be that weapon for the team in a variety of ways.
And the staff's been unbelievable. I mean, they put together zeros all over the place. Carlos Rodon, I'm not sure I'd have believed it if you had told me before the season began that he was going to be this. Lamont, this has to be the best he's pitched in his career.
I mean, it's just been unbelievable. I mean, well, he had such a great spring, and I remember Dallas Keuchel saying, you know, this is the Carlos, during spring training, like, this is the Carlos Rodon that the White Sox drafted, you know, number three overall. Right. And he's been able to carry that over and then some during the regular season. You know, the big thing for him has always been the injuries. Year after year, it's been this, it's been that. He's been on the injured list and off the injured list. And he had this offseason, he was healthy. He was able to, you know, get together with Ethan Katz. Able to connect, and the fact that he was healthy, and he was also motivated. He was motivated from being non-tendered, coming on back, and he said, you know, maybe not the White Sox didn't see from that perspective, but he said that was something that motivated him, and also the fact that he's been healthy and he's been able to produce. And the fastball, that was the thing that was really good on Friday night. I think he said that four of the five hits that he gave up were off of the changeup, but when he had to rear back and throw that fastball, and he was throwing it by the Royals hitters, and so that's been, you know, obviously that was one thing that kind of got stronger and stronger during that no-hitter was that, you know, you look on up and he's throwing in the upper 90s in the eighth and ninth inning during his no-hitter against the Indians. And again, you know, from the first inning on, he had a 97-plus fastball going against the Royals. And so the fastball was blazing, and it was really effective there on Friday night.
Lamont, the Sox success with two strikes, is that something that the pressure has increased because they don't have the big bats in the lineup due to injuries? Or is that something that you focus at the start of training camp and try to bring into the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, it's a luxury. You know, obviously in today's day and age with the game, you know, a lot of the batters, it's you know, never going to cut on down and always trying to swing for the fences and things of that nature. And, you know, no matter what the count's going to be. But to have guys like Nick Madrigal, I talked to him on a Saturday before Saturday's game just about his two-strike approach, and he said, you know, it's 100% a mentality that he has. It's like, you know, the pressure's not really on me. The pressure sometimes is on the pitcher. To, you know, he's got to make a good pitch on that situation as well. And so, you know, there's so and some guys have different approaches. Nick, he doesn't really change from if the count's 0-0 or 0-2, he's going to kind of have that same approach. Someone like Yermín Mercedes, who also has had a lot of success with two strikes, he's someone who cuts on down on his stride, and he's able to just, you know, concentrate on focusing on making contact and having success that way. And so it's a variety of ways. It's not one rhyme or reason that the Sox have said, hey, this is going to be our strategy when you get into that two-strike situation. It's just batter to batter, and those guys have been really successful from that standpoint.
Yasmani Grandal has the weirdest year going I think I've ever seen. He's batting 113, but every night he's walking, and he's walking multiple times, and he tied a record with Babe Ruth over a four-game period. Ozzie said, and on the postgame one night there, I think he had walked four times. It might have been Saturday. He said that he's looking to walk too much. That when you're, I think it was Saturday where he walked four times and he didn't score. And I know he walked once yesterday and did score. But Ozzie's point is, when you're in the seven hole and you walk, you got the 8-9 hitters behind you. It's not like they're the big RBI guys. So either they got to figure out, you know, they need his bat, and I don't know that they need his batting eye. What's your take on that?
Yeah, they made a light switch in the order yesterday, and had him actually bat a little, you know, bat one step ahead of Yermín. With that a little bit in mind, you know, right. Tony said that he didn't mind all the walking, and obviously, like, so, you know, getting on base is a big plus. But he wanted to maybe get that bat going a little bit more, and so he had him batting behind Abreu and ahead of Mercedes. You know, he got the walk there, and you know, was able to score from first on an aggressive send by Joe McEwen there. That worked on out. But it's a situation where we talked to Yasmani before Sunday's game, and he said, you know, right now he thinks that he's hitting the ball well, but it's just right at guys when he does make contact. And then when he said, you know, he's not going to change from that standpoint of, you know, if the pitch is going to be a little bit off, he's not going to go after and get it, because he knows that if he gets on base, that gets to the next guy and they can maybe produce that way. You know, but as far as that lineup strength, that's one of those things with the lineup, right? And that when you don't have an Eloy or you don't have a Luis,
right.
You know, when we started in spring training, discussing and talking about this team, you know, the one thing that we pointed to was just the length of that this lineup was going to have. And one thing that we saw, particularly in that game there, Wednesday against Cincinnati, when you're in a situation where you don't have those type of bats, and you're also kind of constrained by not having the designated hitter, you know, you're kind of forced into a situation where you're kind of relying on guys like Garcia and Hamilton at the bottom of the lineup to have to kind of come on through. You know, as much as we've talked about the not knowing the rule there or you know, the stolen base and situation, you know,
right.
that length of a lineup that kind of gets, that could hurt the team. And that's why, you know, I think I wrote the next day that, well, you know, they're going to be a team that's going to have to maybe outpitch teams instead of outslugging them. And of course, they score 8 runs in the first inning. So nice job, reporter.
Great stuff, though. Lamont, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
That's Lamont Pope from the Chicago Tribune, doing great work. We're going to be right back. 312-644-6767. We have the great Tom Thayer with us this morning, and we're willing to talk about the Bears if you want to. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!